Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! We go. A minute past the hour on this Wednesday, the 8th day of May, 2013. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home, where you will find, among other things, the PayPal button by which we try to keep all of the plates spinning in the air on the little sticks all at the same time, and only by your continued assistance. Thanks go out early this evening. Thanks go out to everyone who responded to Sal's challenge last night. We met the full amount by the end of the program, and I cannot express to you how important that was. The months are just flying by, and here we are beginning the second week of May, and that means that there are the second week of May's bills to be paid, and of course we're still in a $300 hole from last month. So any way you can help out is greatly appreciated. It is the only way that this keeps going. PayPal button is at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, as well as the traditional overland through the air mail address, which is Head On Communications, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318. Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. A gentle reminder, please don't make anything payable to Bob Kincaid, as I don't see it. Head On Communications or The Horn is the way to go for checks, money orders, things like that, because that makes it much easier for Boss Man Wayne, who is doing much better these days, and is primarily depressed by echoes in the mailbox more than anything else. It makes it easier for him to deal with it with our bank account. Yes, I am here. I am in the hills and hollers of West Pycod, Virginia, trying to figure out if there may be a road trip in my future back to D.C. next week, some rather important meetings taking place. Just trying to get all that sorted out. But we don't have to worry about that right now. All we have to worry about is this evening, 3 hours of what we like to call conversation radio, to which you are more than welcome. And also, welcome to jump into the chat room. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. Get in there. The conversation is freewheeling and fun and free. So that's all the setup, I suppose. Of course, I am not uncognizant of what tonight is, because it may be Wednesday, it may be downhill to Friday, it may be hump day in the rest of the world. But here, brethren and sisters, it is prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. Hallelujah, glory. And so as we chase the deacons in to pass the plate around with the little PayPal button in the bottom of it, I will call upon the minister of music to step forward and lead us in the offertory hymn. Remember, with every head bowed and every eye closed, Brother Minister of Music, if you would, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say,
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah! Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus.
Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, he's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah, ting, tang, walla, walla, bing, bang. I love you. Hallelujah, brethren and sister. And this here is the Cathedral of Common Sense. Now, quit fooling around out there in the parking lot smoking with the sinners. Come on through the vestibule. Ignore the 20-year-old bowl of butter mints. And brethren and sister, and come on down that blood-red aisle and fall on your knees at the altar and lay your hands upon the subwoofer. Amen. Glory. And feel the healing rays of common sense flowing through you. Hallelujah. Hallelujah, amen, flowing through you from the server on high. I am ultimate imam, arch pope, uber rabbi, animated animist, skeptical skepticist, Bob Kincaid, and this is the Cathedral of Common Sense, brethren and sister, and this is Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Oh, we have a good one for you. Oh, we've got stories of heroic Christianity just awaiting for you. I do tell you, it is a fact, brethren and sisters. There are heroes of Christianity among us. Two stories, if you will. You may have caught the story last week that a Homer sectional has admitted he's done played the basketball. Glory. Yes, that's right. There have been at least one Homer sectional on our basketball courts, our sacred, holy, athletic basketball courts of the National Basketball Association. There has been a homo there all these times. This homo sectional was there, naked inside the locker room, and he done come out and admitted it, because that's the kind of sick culture we got here. Glory! His name is Jason Collins, and he wants everybody to just pretend that he's normal. He wants people to just act like he's a human being like the rest that they are. Well, there's a couple of folks ain't having it. Among other people, well, there's a Bible-believing church up in the Wisconsin, and they loves their heterosexual Green Bay Packers up there in Wisconsin, they do. And so a church up there invited a former member of the Green Bay Packers, whom they believed to be heterosexual and a godly man. They invited him to come and speak to the congregation about what Jesus means in his life. But now he's done been disinvited by this church. This here church, he's been disinvited because it turns out he's sympathetic to them Homer sectionals. He is. when see, here's how it played out. When Jason Collins said that he was a homosexual playing in the National Basketball Association, Leroy Butler, former safety for the Packers, he done picked up his Twittering, and he tweeted out there, listen to what he tweeted, it's disgusting. He tweeted, congrats to Jason Collins. Oh, the vileness of it. Oh, the wicked ways of Satan in our world. Making Leroy Butler tweet out, congrats to Jason Collins. And when he done that, some of the Bible-believing, upstanding followers of Jesus at that there Wisconsin church, they done heard about it. And they went down to their preacher. And they said, we don't want nobody that likes no... we don't want nobody what congratses any homosexuals coming to our church where we celebrate the eternal love of Christ Jesus for everybody that ain't homosexual. Really? So Leroy Butler said, wow, I was scheduled to speak at a church in Wisconsin, and a member said that the pastor wants to cancel my event. I said, okay, why? Then I was told because I said congrats to Jason Collins on Twitter. I said, really? We have a contract. He said, check the moral clause. FYI, the fee was $8,500. Then I was told if I removed the tweet and apologize and ask God's forgiveness, I can have the event. I said, no. Little golf clap for Leroy Butler. Now understand, when a fundy says to ask God's forgiveness, what the fundy means is for you to ask their forgiveness. And he had to... Imagine that. The followers of the Prince of Peace, saved for all eternity from the barbecue pits of hell. The followers of Jesus Christ insisted that a grown man apologize for congratulating another grown man. And apologize for congratulating another grown man. Doesn't Christianity just fill you with such awe? Don't these fundamentalist Talibanicals, Talibaniacs of right-wing Christianity just make you want to run to the altar and fall on your knees and join their little sick cult? There's a postscript to this. Leroy Butler said to the pastor, okay, we agree to disagree. Sometimes that's just the best way, isn't it? He said, we just agree to disagree. And the preacher turned and said, no, because preachers are like this. They're not prone to liken being questioned, because, you know, they're authority figures and they're cloaked in the awesome mightiness of the imaginary sky critter. The preacher said, no, I'm right, and you're wrong. In what wise, O man of God, is he wrong? He's wrong for congratulating... What? Congratulating is sinful? Offering congratulations for a man simply being honest about himself? For going through an introspective process that most human beings probably could not stand to deal with? Leroy Butler said, this is what bothers me the most. They said, if you ask for forgiveness and remove the tweet, and you say something to the effect that you don't congratulate Collins, then we'll let you do the engagement and get the speaker's fee. And I said, I'm not doing that. Every gay and lesbian person will say, you know, Leroy doesn't speak up for the weak or the silenced. He doesn't stand for anything as a man, and he did it for money. Why would you ask me to reduce my integrity like that? That, you know, kind of makes me scratch my little head. But if I'm not mistaken, and I've, you know, read a good bit of that holy book of theirs, Leroy Butler is behaving more like somebody who follows Jesus than this preacher is. The morals clause in this church's contract, oh, I'd love to see that. Leroy has said he will never work with that church again. The sad thing is, I have read this news story repeatedly, and it comes from the Milwaukee, Wisconsin Journal Sentinel, and all it says is a Wisconsin church. And I guess this is one of those little journalism moments, or maybe Mr. Butler didn't divulge the name of the church. But frankly, we need to know the name of the church. Everybody needs to know the name of the church, because anybody with a conscience, anybody with any morals, anybody with any ethics wouldn't want to be within 20 statute miles of that church. At least not if they consider themselves a Christian. Butler confirmed the church is in Wisconsin, but declined to share its name or approximate location. Mr. Butler, that is part of, what did you say here? Every gay and lesbian person will say, you know, Leroy doesn't speak up for the weak or the silenced. He doesn't stand for anything as a man, and he did it for the money. Well, obviously you're not doing it for the money. Obviously you're a decent man. But part of that decency involves dropping the dime on this den of vipers. Let's see here. Michael wants a linky. Here we go. Blessed be to you too. Irish Dave pointing out, it kind of gives a whole other meaning to playing on the hardwood, doesn't it? Oh, you're oh, you're in the batter's box and swinging away early tonight, Dave. So, there's that. Now, that's the Jason Collins story, right? A man simply says, I have to be honest with myself before I can be honest with the world. And comes out of the closet and says, hey, I'm gay. And a lot of us say, yawn. And some say, well, look at that. The first active athlete still, or first athlete still active in a major American professional sport admitting he's gay. Now, a week before, Brittany Griner had acknowledged that, you know, she's gay. And there wasn't too much hue and cry. I mean, there she was playing basketball for Baylor, you know, the Battling Baptist Bears. And yeah, interestingly, she'd been pretty open about her sexuality during her entire college career at Baylor, and nobody made much noise because, you know, she was a winner. And then when she was became, yeah, okay, I am, it was still a yawner, although, and I think it's because she's a woman. And because weirdo, tamped down, hung up, straight and narrow, fundamentalist right-wingers, men kind of find that lesbianism is a little bit satin. I like to watch. Yeah. Oh, that's gross. But they're that way. But Jason Collins came out, and suddenly, well, you saw what happened to Leroy Butler. Apparently over to the Pastor John Starve Hagee Ministries, he's grooming his son. It always works out this way. You know, Billy Graham's got Franklin, Oral Roberts had Richard, and John Hagee has Matthew Hagee, who was manning, and I use the term loosely, the microphone at the Hagee Hotline, where he answers questions from confused little fundies. So you know the Jason Collins story. It's, frankly, not that much of a story. Professional athletics in this country, like any other industry, has a certain number of gay people in it. And anywhere there are a certain number of gay people, there are going to be a certain number of closeted gay people. In professional athletics, the closet aspect is significantly higher, I think. So Jason Collins coming out was, in a way, kind of a big deal. But it was apparently a bigger deal to Matthew Hagee and the Fundies than it is to you and I. Give a listen.
Pastor, why has the media made such a big deal about the NBA player who has revealed that he is gay? And what do you think about it? You have an NBA player who comes out and confesses to a deprived behavior.
What? You have an NBA player who comes out and confesses to a deprived behavior. Matthew Hagee, Dr. Freud and I would both like to know what you mean by deprived. Just saying. Your slip showing might be a little lacy.
An unnatural thing.
An unnatural thing. Jason Collins is a thing now. Matthew Hagee has removed his humanity from him. Aren't we all just so impressed by the loving compassion of these followers of the Prince of Peace?
Claims that he's homosexual.
Claims? Well, I've never had him in my mouth, so how would I know? Are you asking for a date, Pastor Hagee?
After having been in a relationship with a woman for more than 8 years as her fiancé. That's outright deception.
Outright. Not your garden variety, but outright.
And he's called by the president a hero. It lets you know how skewed the perspective of this country has become.
Skewed? Skewed? Really? Wouldn't you remember the Jetsons episode where George went for his physical, company physical, on orders of Mr. Spacely? And the little diagnostic thingy that was supposed to putt through his system actually got shot into the inside of a mummy's head, and they told George that he was dying, and he only right. Remember that? Remember what the inside of the mummy's head looked like, with like a bunch of spiders and spider webs and creepy crawly dark cornered horror movie stuff? Don't you figure if we had one of those that could take pictures inside of Matthew Hagee's head, it'd look a lot like that? The inside of Matthew Hagee's head probably looks a lot like this little gargoyle. And I know he's not really a gargoyle. There's a different architectural name for him that I've got, who sits every night up above, looking down on me as he gnaws on a shin bone or something. Be a lot like that.
Rather than being one nation under God, and giving.
Oh, are we going to go down this road again? It's like perpetual rerun season.
Accolades to an athlete who is willing to play the role of a role model and live his life under God. We are calling...
Under God? You mean he's a bottom? I didn't know God did that.
A man who lives his life in a behavior that is an abomination to God.
Because, you know, God told him.
As if he were a hero. The president himself has said, I called him and told him he was a hero. That's not true, Mr. President.
Really? You're saying the president didn't call him and tell him he was a hero? That's pretty brassy, Matthew. By the way, is that midnight plum blush you're wearing or spring peach? And the way you got your hair gassed back there all Pat Riley-like, now, are you a Dapper Dan man or are you a fop man? I'm guessing fop.
He's not a hero. He's sadly deceived and desperately confused.
And you can tell all that just because he said he's gay. Man, them powers of the spirit are powerful indeed, aren't they?
But he's not a hero.
Yeah, not a hero. Okay, well, thanks for that, Matthew Hickey. Not a hero. See, Michael got it. Deprived? Sounds like Matthew Hagee's feeling a bit deprived of depravity in his life. I don't even want to think about the freak show that goes on when the lights go out at the Hagee house. Hey, Paul, where's the bacon grease? Aha. No. Okay, so Isaac, are you? Isaac apparently thought he had the church that went all morals clause on Leroy Butler, but now he tells me it's not the church. Do I understand that right, Isaac? A little clarification, please. And Jim, with a trenchant inquiry, a question, Bob. Why do so many straight men enjoy lesbian sex on video or by other means if the same is so disgusting? Well, see, it's a... No, gay male sex is disgusting to fundamentalist men, Jim. Lesbian sex is hot. Really? I don't understand it. I don't profess to. But I hate to play this card so early in the program, but it's not just American culture that's this way. Remember, German homosexual men were marched off to the ovens. Lesbian women were encouraged to take one for the team and have a baby for the Aryan race. With a little nudge and a wink after the turkey baster part was over with. And, you know, that's another thing. You can gauge the degree to which they are really turned on by it by the degree of disgust that they manifest. I can't believe, oh, he's deprived, and he's denied himself, and he's confused. Well, I'd like to help get him unconfused. What did I say? Prayer meeting Wednesday. Prayer meeting Wednesday. Stephen Green Bay just pointing out, Michael Jordan was a gambling addict, a womanizer, and the church asshats didn't say shit about his sins. Oh, no. Oh, no. And Waggy's on his game tonight in the chat room. He said, listening to these excerpts is like watching maggots crawling on a squirrel corpse. Well, there went, doggone it. There went dinner. This is the dinner hour, you know, for some listeners. Sorry, Scott. But Waggy did go, where's the bacon grease, Paul? Just grab the drippings can from the stove, son. Got to be sexier if it tastes like bacon. Oh. Oh, well, by the way there, it's so fun being ahead of the curve sometimes. The other, what was it, Moran Monday? Yeah, I think so. When we were talking about the, no, it really bleeds, Obama corpse target, zombie corpse target. I mentioned that it was sort of flying under the radar, that they also had a target, you know, big busted with a bloodied mouth that really bleeds when you shoot it, simply called the X, and remarked upon how disturbing I found that. It's not that not that folks are listening or anything, but they have caught up. You can no longer purchase the X, zombie female target corpse dummy, on Amazon. Amazon's pulled it. Of course, that kind of tells you that Amazon doesn't pay much attention to what goes up in the first place. In the promotional materials touting this woman figure icon that one may shoot and which will then really, really bleed, Zombie Industry says to discriminate against women by not having them represented in our product selection would be just plain sexist. Now, granted, it's video, but there might be some useful audio in here, too. The bleeding female zombie shoot promotional video from Zombie Industries. Goes back to 2011. Got some zombie music. Oh, this is weird and psychotic. River of blood, apparently. Running through some weeds. Yeah. Guy on a four-wheeler with a gun. God. Looking past paper targets, and there she is. This one's a redhead. Now, this is just really stupid and creepy, but can I point out for a minute, please, what this says about the mindset of the people who buy them? And maybe people will think that I'm making just a little too much, putting a little too fine a point on it. There's a big difference between a video like this hustling a target that you're going to pump actual bullets into and a game like Left 4 Dead. Among other things, in Left 4 Dead, you don't necessarily have to use a firearm. You can beat zombies with Stratocaster guitars, iron skillets, baseball bats. I think there's a chainsaw in there. There's a difference. The guy rides up on his four-wheeler with a shocked look on his face, and he... And oh, God, what comes next? Now, here we have what looks like one, two, three, four, five guys with real semi-automatic firearms. And they're going to protect America from scantily clad, big-busted zombie women named the X. May I point out that they're actually shooting her not in the head. They're using laser sights, and they are shooting her in the breasts. These are your Second Amendment freedom protectors. Women are after our freedom? Really?
zombie's dead.
Zombie industry target.
And there she is, shot to pieces.
Dodge this.
You hear that? A guy walks up to the mannequin, puts a pistol point blank to her head, and says, "Dodge this." And then kicks her. Kicks this mannequin. That was a 17-round semi-automatic pistol that he just put into the back of the woman mannequin's head. He rolls her over with his foot onto her, where she's face down, and then puts 17 rounds into the back of her head. Comes in a blonde model, comes in a redheaded model, brunette. This is a slow pan of all the bullet damage on her body. With stills of the heroic freedom protectors wearing Mona Lisa t-shirts, taking dead aim at the zombie. I don't know about you, but I don't feel so good. Then, of course, there's the fact that not only do they have a video of this, they have website testimonials. Really? They have website testimonials. Let's see here. What are some ex-zombie purchasers saying out there about this? "The dark-haired one looks like my bitch ex-wife, who I hate. I can't wait to shoot her face off for taking my shit." Then this. "This zombie bitch is awesome. Reminds me of a girl I knew in high school." Really? Then a third endorsement. "I love that this target looks like Britney Spears and it bleeds when I shot it." There's your lawful gun owners. Jeremy, right again. He says, "So these NRA freaks love this X dummy that bleeds, love the multiple Obama dummies zombies, and none but none of them being teabag right-wing freaks got all bent out of shape when the TV show Game of Thrones." I know what you're getting at. Yeah, some of you watch Game of Thrones. It's really, really, I mean, as TV goes, it's good TV. First or second episode of the first season, there's a quick pan by a bunch of heads spitted on pikes, and it turns out one of them's a George W. Bush head. Which means that some right-winger had to really, really slow things down. And HBO admitted, "Yeah, it's the guy in the props department. They were just looking for dummy heads, and yeah, it turned out, yeah, oh well, we're sorry." But the right-wingers, all those little monkeys, they were hopping up and down, one foot to the other, and screeching and howling and hollering about how, oh, we can't have this. And that was just a props department mistake. Yeah, they had a hissy out of that. But they're certainly down with shooting representations of all the rage they feel against women. Jeremy says, I tend to think the Obama and X dummies will do far more harm than the 5 second pass by. It wasn't even 5 seconds of that piped head. These people are effing sick. Yes, they are. I'm sorry you're not having fun, Jim. It's just, you know, it's the world we live in. He says, and you call this fun conversation? I think not. Well, we didn't always say it was going to be a ride on the merry-go-round now, did we? Michael says, I got this one. Bob, it's simple. Most straight men fantasize about having a threesome. Watching two hot lesbians get it on, especially if the conceit is that one or both of the women is simply bi-curious, but ostensibly straight, facilitates this fantasy. The absence of a male and his giant porn star Johnson flapping around in the scene makes it all the easier for the man to imagine himself joining in the action. And that is why lesbian sex is so hot to straight males. Personally, I have no such threesome fantasy, but I know a lot of guys who do, and I find it rather immature. Good word. Tim from L.A. pointing out under the subject line, zombie sickness. Bob, children emulate adults. Now imagine a mentally ill teabagger. Gee, that's a bit redundant, Tim, but yeah. Decides that the mannequin is not fun enough, so decides to do the same to a real woman. I mean, this is all in fun, right? Well, what about us gun-toting liberal atheists? Would it be fun if we did the same to a zombie Jeebus mannequin? Now, that would be fun killing a zombie. Yeah, see, that's not okay, because remember, the operative phrase inside all of this is I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican. Jim seems to think that I'm sure the Nazis did kill some lesbians too, but they also encouraged them to go and breed for the cause. Isaac pointing out, if Obama can call a basketball player for coming out of the closet, he should thank that guy in Cleveland for getting three women out of a dungeon. Yeah, no kidding. Of course, the smoking gun has already done a number on Charles Ramsey, because we couldn't just let a feel-good story alone and let it be a feel-good story. They had to dig up his criminal past, his criminal record. Which does tend to follow one around. So now I guess he's not quite the hero he was, but yes, he is. Yes, he is. So, let's see, zombies, homophobic Christians, NRA freaks. Oh, then this. I'll bet you didn't know this, because I didn't. Then again, I guess I'm just projecting. When I heard about the NRA, they had a couple of magazines. One was called American Rifleman, and the other one was called American Shooter or American Hunter or something like that. Well, diddly danged, if they don't have... You know what? You can probably find it in a pediatrician's office somewhere in West Virginia. No more timber toes for you, little Johnny. We've got NRA Insights News for young shooters. You know, young shooters. Young shooters like, oh my goodness, here we go. The 5-year-old boy and the 7-year-old brother in, of course, fill in the blank, Texas, Houston to be particular. Last night, as a matter of fact, Well, the 5-year-old and the 7-year-old were in the bathtub. And for some reason or other, the 5-year-old got out of the bathtub. How many times have I told you not to go padding through the house naked out of the tub? Dry off first. No, he got out of the bathtub, went and found the family shooting gun, brought the shooting gun back to the bathroom, and shot his 7-year-old brother. Now, what's the name of the NRA magazine? Oh, yeah. NRA Insights News for Young Shooters. The upside of this story, if there can be said to be one, the upside is that the 7-year-old lived. He's recovering at an area hospital, according to the story. Mama was in the house, but not in the bathroom, and apparently not near enough to keep the 5-year-old from getting the family shooting iron and going and blasting 7-year-old big brother. Sergeant Ryan Gardner is with the law enforcement authorities covering the case. He said, the injuries were non-life-threatening. It was one bullet hole that went through his lower back. What's a bullet hole through the lower back among brothers? I mean, there'll be a family reunion when he's 48 and his victim's 50. And hey, you remember that time? Yeah, we was in the bathtub. Yeah. Hey, kids, come here. This is a funny story. Yeah. You won't believe this. Me and your uncle was taking a bath one Tuesday night back in 2013. No, really, really, kids. And I he wouldn't give me the rubber ducky, and I got out of the tub and I went and got Pop's gun, and I come back and. Yeah, I shot your uncle in the back. Yeah. He still got the scar there. Yeah, but it wasn't a life-threatening wound. It was so close. The muzzle velocity on that was so damn fast. It just shot through him like a whole punch. Didn't do nothing to him. I mean, it hurt him. He hollered. My golly goodness. He hollered his little old head off. I can still hear him hollering to this day. Yeah. Now, just because me and your uncle, just because I shot your uncle, youngins, don't mean that y'all can go shooting your cousins. Don't put the gun down, Silas. Silas! Really? So, yeah, not to worry. This is really kind of a non-story because the wounds were not life-threatening. You got to wonder if maybe they get the NRA Insights News for Young Shooters magazine. Now, boys, when you're aiming at your brother in the bathtub, it's not like wing shooting where you got to lead him a little bit. When your brother's sitting with his back to you in the bathtub, what you want to do is to make sure you've got a real steady aim. It's a different kind of shooting big brother in the bathtub. Really? So there's an article in Insights News and it's NRAIN, and then capital S as in Insights, as in I've got you in my sights. As in targeting, in the January 2013 issue of Insights News for Young Shooters magazine, the cover story is BB, as in, you know, BB gun, BB, comma, it's cold outside. And then the subhead for that, I wish this was from The Onion. You have no idea how sincerely I wish this was from The Onion. BB, it's cold outside. Baby, it's cold outside. You know, a 7-year-old knows that song? Really? BB, it's cold outside. Oh, that is some clever copywriting. With the subheading, no, really, strap in, get the tennis ball, the duct tape, because the neighbors will hear the screaming otherwise. BB, it's cold outside. indoor shooting's fun with BB guns, exclamation point. I read this earlier today, and I did. I checked out all the links. I went to see if it was an Onion thing. No, they're serious. The other headline on this news for young shooter is Freezer Freakout. Make the most of your harvested game. The cover photo is of a child sitting alone with no adult anywhere in sight with a gun by the fireplace, wearing his camo pajamas, barefoot. Here's the advice from the article. Jesus, I wish this wasn't real. Really, really. I'll be darned. The NRA seems to have lost the link. But anyway, when you set... Really, they're telling children to set up an indoor firing range for BB guns. Now, make sure you get mom and dad's permission first. Eliminate ricochet with a proper backstop. You have no idea how bouncy a tiny metal ball can be until you hear one whizzing by your head, or maybe hitting you in the eye, or clipping a chunk off your ear. There are plenty of indoor range setups you can find on the internet. Now be careful, kids. You don't want people opening a door or looking in a window to see a BB gun pointing at them. It's great advice, isn't it? While you're thinking of cool stuff to use as targets, may we recommend Zombie Industries? Yes, they call it the X, but for some of you with some advanced early issues, you can just call her Mom. No, that's not in there. While you're thinking of cool stuff to use as targets, also keep in mind how you're going to set them up in your range. Hanging targets work great, by the way. Check page 93 at the end of the magazine for proper noose-making techniques. Okay, that's not in there either, at least not the news. Hanging targets work great, by the way. That is really in the magazine. When you're trying to improve accuracy, BB guns are the best. If you have a habit of flinching when pulling the trigger, BB guns will help you work that out. Maybe counseling? The first and most important thing to remember is that with air guns, any projectile that does not hit a proper pellet stop has a very high possibility of a ricochet or bounce back. This is particularly true of the BB gun using round steel projectiles. Thanks for that. Every year there are 22,000 emergency room visits by Americans, and the majority of them are children aged 5 to 14 who have hurt themselves with BB guns. The American Association of Pediatrics says, you know, these things are weapons, and they should be characterized as weapons and never characterized as toys. Yeah, Betsy says, I'm not screaming. I'm crying. Jenny says, this is bad, but Jesus was a real zombie. He did rise from the dead. True enough. Assuming you buy that. Prayer meeting Wednesday. Christians. How many upstanding Christian families, you suppose, buy those cricket 22 caliber rifles for their children, you know, in the name of Jesus? Whew. So that's our starting place this evening. Phone lines are open, 304-658-3333. Also open is the Skype line, Bob Kincaid Horn. They both work fine. Let's go to the phones.
Evening.
Hey, Bill, what's happening?
Oh, man, what's happening? Look at the Cleveland newspaper.
Say what?
The Cleveland newspaper will tell you all you need to know.
Oh, really?
If they still print one. Otherwise, all three channels will teach you. That was an interesting segment. Makes you worry. When the hell did this stuff start? You know, it used to be an unhealthy sexual maniac would have one client at a time. And we thought that was horrible.
Yeah.
And now you begin to wonder whether there's any sanity left anywhere anymore. I don't know. Me, I take these three guys, and one at a time, they could go in a room with a bunch of the male family members of the young ladies, and let's see how fast they could talk their way out of it.
Yeah.
There'd be a lot fewer teeth getting in the way of their speech pattern. So.
These things, I get ready for the show every day, Bill, and I read this stuff, and I go, is it really? This is the country? This is America?
Yeah.
Agnes has this running joke that when we got back from the Lib cruise, that we actually passed through the Bermuda Triangle and came back to some sort of alternate reality. I'm just about getting right there close to believing her and being with her on it. This place has just gone nuts.
Yeah. It's just gone crazy, is it right? And as I say, thank God somebody was paying attention over there and saw something and acted on it. And, young kids, man, what a thing. It bothers the hell out of me. But that's just me, I guess. I don't know. It's because, Bob, one thing about the music business, I had plenty of opportunities to be with. I had three sisters, for instance, and one of them, the two of them were pushing their sister at me. I found out the kid was 16. Well, hell, I was only 31 myself, so I kind of passed on it, you know?
Yeah.
I said, no, I prefer... I don't mind teaching somebody how to say, how to sing a blues or how to play a harp, but let somebody their own age work with them on the other facets of life. I got enough trouble getting along with women my own age. In fact, the women my own age were fun because they could see through you like a bag of air if you were trying to con one of them. You know, that was half the
sure.
fun. But hey, I thought about it last night when this stuff hit the fan. Because that area, these guys were operating all out of the same area geographically. Where they had grabbed these women were almost all in the same places.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. But I've been involved with them. There's a new book came out on in the reading, you know, the talking book area on D&B and Foo, and man, this was well written by a it doesn't, you know, it goes into so much depth of what of Hoe and the French and the American diplomats and how the whole thing developed, you know. And how it never should have developed because FDR, he did not want the French back in Indochina. He told them to stay the hell out. But they went back. And, you know, 10 years after, about after D&D and Fool, we're into our eyeballs, you know. And friends of mine were dying over there. And it should never have happened. But I'll let you go because there's other folks that want to talk. But yeah, that thing last night really, really stunned me. And I think, you know, I've been around and I've seen a lot of stuff, but that was just unreal. How could they? I mean,
nobody seems to have an answer, and that's everybody. Everybody's the sort of same kind of bamboo. How could that? How did it? And you know, Charles Ramsey said, "This guy just acted like nothing was going on."
Yeah.
Go out in the backyard, tinker with his bike. Go out in the backyard, you know, whatever. Just another day.
Well, were you talking about men and lesbians? Men in watching women's skin flicks?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that I caught a little bit of that tonight. Yeah, they all act like these guys all act like they're going to be invited to join. With the gay women I know, most of them would be invited to leave in a hurry.
Well, I remember an old George Carlin gag. I listened to a lot of George Carlin growing up.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know,
he was funny.
Very funny. And parents hated it, so naturally, you know, they gravitated toward it. But he said that he advocated that lesbians should have their own cologne. And this is from a routine in the 1970s. Okay. And he said, lesbians should have their own cologne called Fuck Off, Mister.
Interesting. Good idea. Because I don't care what somebody else does, that somebody else is willing to do, ain't much of my business.
You're right. My life is fairly rich and fulfilling, so I don't need to worry about what other people are doing with theirs.
Amen.
But apparently, Bill, we're kind of in a minority. I mean, if you look at the way that journalism now is described by parameters in which we take private tragedies and turn them into public spectacles, that have absolutely nothing to do with the general body politic or our culture or our society. You know, something like Newtown is a national story. Yeah. On the other hand, a garden variety murder verdict in a court case that Nancy Grace fulminates over for a year and a half. Yeah, there's a distinction. There's a difference there.
Yeah. Too much.
But the other thing about men fantasizing down that road we were talking about, see, a lot of men like to think, and go figure, but guys will look at women who are not inclined toward men and think, yeah, but if she was with me, I'd turn her.
You might be having to go get your jaw wired up, buddy.
Well, you know, that it's interesting you would mention that because something like that happened the other night. So, did you see the story? In the Air Force, they have an office of, it's called the Sexual Assault and Prevention Response Program.
Yeah, I've heard of that part, yeah.
Yeah, so it's all about trying to break the rape culture inside the military, particularly
lots of luck
in the Air Force. And a news story said, on May 5th at 12:35 a.m., a drunken male subject approached a female victim in a parking lot and grabbed her breasts and buttocks. The victim fought the suspect off as he attempted to touch her again and alerted police. Jeffrey Krusinski, 41, of Arlington, Virginia, was arrested and charged with sexual battery. He was held on a $5,000 unsecured bond. His mugshot photo is in the story, and I mean he is beat up. She whipped his ass. Now, here's the fun part. You know who Jeff Krusinski is, Bill?
No.
He's actually Lieutenant Colonel Jeff Krasinski. And he was the officer in charge of the Air Force Sexual Assault and Prevention Response Program.
Wonderful. Well, he was trying to get first-hand experience, I guess.
Doing a little field work? I'm not even...
Yeah, it could have been. But he got some first-hand experience by the sound of it.
Well, this is, you know, this is the same Air Force.
Maybe a club, I don't know.
This is the same Air Force where a general in a court-martial overturned a sexual assault conviction.
Oh, boy.
That the jury had returned. A jury heard the evidence, a jury rendered a verdict, and the general overturned it.
Oh, God.
Yeah. You know, on the one, I just whoever Krasinski's victim was, again with the little golf clap.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to do that twice.
I worry a lot because they kept quiet after World War One and Two and Korea, and Vietnam. How many guys came out of there that had a whole raft of problems they were carrying with? And they glossed it over and acted like it never happened. And
well, you know, things happen. War is hell, right? That's where we haul out General Sherman. Yeah, war is hell.
But hell, when you turn guys loose, and they do a lot of things. My second wife's father, we used to fish late at night, and he was a Marine. He fought at Saipan and Iwo and Tinian, I think. And we'd fish late at night, and he'd tell me that he saw a lot of things that, after the war, still haunt him. He said things that I didn't expect of an American to do, because he said, remember, we were guys that joined up after Pearl, and we had a head full of patriotism, but we didn't expect some of the viciousness that we saw later on to... In other words, he said, to me, a prisoner was a prisoner. And that was it, you know. And another buddy of mine who played drums for me, his father was a survivor of the German submarine force, which was a small bunch who survived that mess. And my buddy said his dad, he took his dad to see Das Boot. And he said his dad would turn to him and say, you know, son, I can... Looking at this movie, I can smell the inside of that submarine. He had sweat all over him. But like his dad told him, when he went and joined the sub force, it was either that or take a nice tour of the Soviet Union. And that's one you don't want to wager your, you know...
No, take a pass.
...dice about. It's a pretty rough choice. Well, anyway, I'll let you go, and then we'll find myself intrigued, I suppose, for the rest of the evening. Except, it's playoff season, Bob, what can I tell you?
I understand.
Yeah.
That was a hell of a game at Memphis and Oklahoma City last night.
Well, if you're a basketball man, yeah.
Yeah. Hockey playoffs, too, yes.
Yeah, where did Oklahoma City ever come from?
That's a sordid tale. They were the Seattle Supersonics.
Oh, okay.
And that's the story about the owner who took all the executives to dinner and then fed them testicles.
Oh, Jesus.
Bull testicles to show them that they, you know, that he was going to rule with an iron fist. I felt so sorry for anybody that had to move from a place like Seattle to a place like Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
But,
well, I could make a remark about that was a lot of, that dinner that night took a lot of,
yeah.
I'll let it go with that. Take care of yourself.
Bill, have a good night.
You too.
Bye-bye. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, legendary bluesman, calling from Cleveland. Lines open, 304-658-3333. And just a little bit of a postscript to the Lieutenant Colonel Jeff Krasinski story. You know what it reminds me of? First thing I thought of when I saw this story was that story of the Muslim woman in Iran who was set upon by the purity police or whatever those thugs think they are, and cover thyself, thou vile, vulgar female. And she just went over and beat the hell out of the mullah or whatever he was. Just beat him bloody. And while I am not an advocate of violence, there's something about that that is inspiring. Kind of lets you know that there might be a little bit of hope that the male half of this species might yet be civilizable. We're not all that way. Just a reminder, we are not all that way. Some of us don't have to be beaten into respecting women. So there's that. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Jeremy, what's happening?
Hey, I want to speak about everyone's favorite self-proclaimed Christian, Rush Limbaugh.
Oh. Yeah, he's...
Have you heard this yet?
Well, I don't know. I know he's. I know his revenue numbers have begun swirling down the toilet.
Yeah, the Wall Street Journal and several papers have... And before, it was just kind of a hearsay between people who didn't like him and had ill wishes of him. His contract is really in jeopardy right now. He has lost $5 million in sales for this year alone, not including his bail last year. This all stems from Sandra Cook. It's still haunting him, which it should, because what he said was vile.
Yeah.
But he doesn't stop with Sandra Fluke. He makes it even worse. He went after the three women that were held hostage for 10 years.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, yesterday he said that they must have liked it because they didn't try to escape. So it was kind of a, what's that?
What?
I can't think what it is.
I thought I had lost my capacity to be shocked, Jeremy, but apparently it's still, you know, alive and huddled, weeping in some corner. He said that.
But it gets better. He said that they were they weren't victims. They must have enjoyed it. They probably did something to provoke this, and like they didn't try to escape. And now they're going to be victims of the system and live off it the rest of their lives. As in, like, welfare or something, because they'll become queens and they'll just cry and complain about the rest of their lives and they'll make money off of it and never have to work a day in their life again.
Sweet Jesus. It's God almighty. At this point, you have to ask a question. Is that deliberate? Did he do that because he's trying? Is this one of those there's no such thing as bad publicity moments? I don't know.
I think it's him pushing the system as far as he can to prove that to the masses, in some ways, he's untouchable. But at the same point, he can't believe some of the stuff he says. It has to be almost a shock value at this point to see what he can say that's going to make people truly mad. Now, the Sandra Fluke thing, he did back off, and he did give a half-assed apology saying he didn't mean it the way it was. It was sarcasm. This one he didn't back off of. He went full force on this one. I didn't hear the clip, but I have a friend who monitors some stuff like this, not as a fan, but through their links, and they heard this. And let's just say they work for Bernie, so they're definitely not a fan of Rush. They weren't supporting it.
It's time to go. And frankly, I was reading earlier today about the fact that, you know, Stop Rush has the hashtag Stop Rush and the Stop Rush organization has been hugely successful.
Well, they've even been successful against Glenn, too. He did another Twitter handle called Stop Beck or something like that, and that's been successful, too.
Yeah.
Now, I know Beck said when he left the air from Fox, CNN, wherever the hell he was, he said, he told his radio listeners, don't for once ever let anyone tell you they forced me up. I'm leaving because I don't like it anymore. That became pure bullshit about 6 months ago because Fox came out and said, no, it was a revenue issue. He was causing them ratings losses and money losses due to that Obama hates all white people.
Yeah, that was where the Becker said, I did it to save my soul.
Yes.
And the Fox executive said, no, he did it to save his ass.
Yeah, because he said he wanted them to tell them, everyone, that he did it for his own sake, and they didn't force him out. Fuck no, they forced him out. They knew he was a loony bag who cost them money just like Clear Channel looking at Rush pretty hard right now, wondering if he's worth it in the end.
Well, the other thing is he's lost $5 million in ad revenues this year. This goes back to something that I've queried for years now. You know, this guy gets paid something like, $50 million a year, all right?
It is 50, because, yeah, it actually might be more than that, because Glenn gets $50 million a year.
Well, how then, Jeremy, does that economic model sustain itself? Because not only do they have to pay him, they have to pay the Clear Channel executives, they have to pay the Cumulus executives. Cumulus is actually the parent company that syndicates Limbaugh, the one that he's having a fight with right now. Where does the money come from? My suspicion has always been, and my hypothesis has always been, that things like Limbaugh, and I do mean things like Limbaugh, are actually deep subsidized by the right wing. You cannot sell enough vacuum cleaners that pick up Swedish bowling balls and drop them on mattresses where hair is growing from an herbal erection remedy to pay that guy, let alone support the entire superstructure of that so-called broadcast juggernaut. It's got to be a flim-flam operation.
I think it is, and he has the same effect on some of those corporations that people in talk radio, such as, we'll say, Howard Stern had on Saturday when they pour all the money into him and the up-and-coming students and other shows, there's no money for them, even though they're hugely popular. They're underpaid compared to him because Howard Stern sucks up $500 million a year of their contract money.
In the end,
Clear Channel and whoever subsidizes Rush has always said it's not what he said, it's the fact it's costing them money. They don't give a goddamn what he says.
Yeah, it's like, based on what you described, Jeremy, it's like an email just came in from Michael. Subject line, Limbaugh alert. Attention all public safety authorities. Check Limbaugh's basement now. You know, because I've said for years that, you know, that we don't hear much from Mrs. Limbaugh, and I suspect he's got her in a pit. You know, doing the whole, you know, it puts the lotion on its skin thing.
Well, you don't see much of Rush anymore either because he does his operation from his own home studio in the islands down south. He doesn't venture out of that place very often. It's practically a guarded, protected neighborhood of its own.
Yeah, he's. I saw his house on Google Earth one night because somewhere the address was published, and I went and had a look. And you know, it's a 27,000 square foot mansion that he shares with Mrs. Limbaugh, a cat, and the maid.
The maid's probably back.
The maid's still on the payroll because she's the one that was taking the cigar box full of thousands of dollars and going out and getting him bringing back a cigar box full of narcotics purchased on the street.
Well, he's also got that brainwashed co-host producer of him. I forget what his name is, but he's always claimed he's African American. I've never seen this guy in my life.
There have been a succession of Mr. Snurdleys.
Okay, well,
Bo Snurdly is a construct. Not a real person. It's whoever his that's how dehumanizing he is. Whoever his producer is Mr. Snurdly.
Right. He uses the name, and once in a while, if you listen, which I don't, I've been forced to because of people I hang out with occasionally, you'll hear Mr. quote-unquote Snurdly speak up in the background, "Oh, yeah, I'm African-American. I'm quite conservative, blah, 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 blah. Russia's the greatest thing."
Yeah,
who knows? But like I said before, when you think he's sunk as low as he can go, he always finds that next tier he can get down to.
Oh no, there's always a sub. Yeah, there's a sub basement, and he's always willing to sink a little further.
But the sad thing is that even if Clear Channel, his company, dumps him, he will find a new outlet. He'll go somewhere like Beck did. He'll lay low for a while, and he'll get. Maybe what Beck got, a DirecTV deal where he has his own channel where he's on, blah, 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 to the masses to watch and watch blindly and drool and follow along to him.
Isaac just sent me along a story about this this Limbaugh clip, and it's absolutely disgusting. We'll probably have to listen to it so we can share our misery.
I didn't completely hear. I only heard the breakdown and the greatest hits of it, but the three things I heard were pretty freaking disgusting.
Jesus.
So we can only hope they send a message and Buchanan's ass, and maybe he'll disappear for a while and not be so much coast to coast on every AM or FM channel that carries his talk format. Because most channels that cover him, they give him his full 3 hours, and they make the other two dweebs on both sides of him usually skip out 1 or 2 hours to fit his fat.
Well, that's probably because of the nature of the contract for carrying, what does he call himself, America's Truth Detector?
Please. On the EIB, the Excrement in Broadcast.
Yeah, the Excrement in Broadcast Network, right.
Yeah, the EIB, yes, Excrement, that's good.
But you know, for you and for anybody else who gets on Twitter or what, if you go to Stop Rush, I think it's StopRush.com. If you go there, they maintain a list of his advertisers. For instance, apparently, Dairy Queen is advertising with him right now. So I saw a tweet earlier today where a guy had tweeted, "No more Dairy Queen for me until you quit giving money to Rush Limbaugh and use the hashtag #StopRush."
And that's the same reason why UPS was a big sponsor of Rush for whatever god unknown reason, because their workers stand against everything he does. I mean, they're all, of course, they're unionized. He hates unions with a passion. Well, he doesn't. He doesn't care. He's rich. It doesn't affect him. But they backed off him because of Santa Fe. Because of
yeah, but remember, he's a union member.
And that's the hidden, nauseous part of it.
All of these right wing, all these right wing gas bags, all of these two legged turds, are members of AFTRA.
Exactly, and they don't like to say that. They hide it, but it is known. But UPS pulled their sponsors from them because people said no more UPS store, no more shipping UPS, and so you guys get the hell out of his company.
Yeah, and look, that's the free market, Jeremy. That is the free market that they're so fond of. But by God, when their ox is the one getting gored, they're not so fond of it anymore. Because they've lost all realistic concept of what it means. They think that their gravy train entitles them. You know, they like to use that word entitlement a lot. Well, the real entitlement sleazes are people like Limbaugh, who think that the world owes him a living. He thinks, in whatever passes for a brain, he thinks that there is some sort of obligation for the world to hear him.
That's true. I'll end by saying this. I would hope that all Horn listeners, Malloy listeners, anyone that hears this, if you have a Twitter handle, go to Stop Beck, go to Stop Rush, and retweet their stuff. It's powerful and it's helping. It is actually taking these guys down little by little. Every retweet counts. People see that stuff.
Yeah, we might actually de-coarsen the discourse sometime. Exactly.
People don't think it counts, but it counts. When people start seeing those dollar signs because of people like Stop Beck, Stop Rush, those accounts go out enough people, and they start seeing it affects change bit over little after little.
I'm
going to retweet some stuff right now.
And good job. Every bit helps. Thanks, Jeremy. Have a good evening.
You too. Thanks.
All right. Bye now. Jeremy calling from Vermont. 23 minutes past the hour. Yeah, this seems like an appropriate time to take a little break. Why not? Again, a reminder, we try to raise about $150, not $150,000, not $1.5 million. Benny Hinn, since this is Prayer Meeting Wednesday, Benny Hinn, you know Benny Hinn, the Jesus hustler, whatever, is telling his faithful that he has to raise $2 million like yesterday. By comparison, $150 a night doesn't seem like a lot, does it? But that is what we try to raise to keep all of this going. And at present, at the halfway mark of the program, we are at zero. So any help is profoundly appreciated. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, as is the traditional mail address. Okay? So the phone lines are open, 304-658-3333. Calls also come in to Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. That's our Skype line contact. You're welcome to chime in from either direction, because after all, this is a little something we like to call conversation radio. We call it the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Thanks for the bumper, Michael. We'll be right back. Zombie, the Cranberries. Again, thanks to Michael for the suggestion. Good one. All right. Let's get this over with. We are at the halfway mark of tonight's prayer meeting Wednesday, by the way. Let's get this over with. This evening's wade into the cesspit. The filthy one on women kidnapped for 10 years and what he takes to be the meaning of that.
I want to talk for a minute about these three people that have been missing for 10 years in Cleveland and found. I'll bet many of you thought there's nothing Rush can say about that. Oh, ho, 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 ho. I have no idea. Nobody does yet. At least, if somebody knows, I haven't been able to keep up with the story. It happened just before the show started. These three people discovered missing for 10 years, staying in some malcontent's house or whatever. I have no idea. If the latest news on this, I don't know it, if there's any more than that. But, as it so happens, I happened last night to watch Hawaii Five-0 on CBS.
That by itself is pitiful. You know, you've just... here, let me go ahead and set the scene for you. Fat, puzzle-gutted, pale, roll-laden, sitting in his boxer shorts, eating Cheetos, Limbaugh, just deciding to watch Hawaii Five-0. Now, this is the setup, that he happened to watch Hawaii Five-0, and that is what enables him to say what he's about to say. He no more watched Hawaii Five-0 than I watched Ancient Aliens. Trust me, I don't watch that. Once was enough. So anyway, Flush, what did you learn on Hawaii Five-0?
Hawaii Five-0's premise last night was kidnapped girls. Held until they were 18... and then let go or killed. Well, always killed.
Let go, killed. I think it's a distinction without a difference for a guy who keeps his wife in a pit. Just say. Come on back. Come on back.
By a couple doing it for the welfare benefits. Just reprobate. Husband and wife, the husband, a lazy SOB, claiming he had a disability and couldn't work. They kidnapped young girls and kept them...
Wait. Lazy SOB, reprobate, claiming he had a disability and couldn't work. Is that kind of like claiming you've got a pilonidal cyst, you know, a festering boil on your butt to keep you out of Vietnam, Flush? Is it... There's a little reminiscent quality to the tone of your voice there.
In shackles. This was the premise. It's just a TV show. But I thought, well, it's fascinating. Kept them in shackles.
Fascinating.
In a hidden room in their run-down house somewhere on Oahu. The 5-0 team trying to find them for the parents. One girl was missing for 12 years. Found dead somewhere out in the hinterlands. And the 5-0 team did the...
There are hinterlands in Hawaii?
They found out what it was, and the guy was simply kidnapping these girls to provide tax exemptions and qualification for welfare benefits, so he'd have to work. And then when they were no longer useful, at age 18... he killed him. Until, of course, 5-0 came
setup.
On and saved the day. Now, I don't know what happened to Cleveland, but I couldn't help but make the connection. I mean, if everybody else in the low information crowd is going to use what happens on TV for reality, why can't I?
Wait, moment. Did he? He said, if everybody else in the low information crowd can use what's on TV, why can't I? Did the Flimball one just admit he's part of the low information crowd? Think so.
Here it is. Three women missing 9-plus years found alive. All were teenagers when they disappeared. Does anybody know yet why? Has the story advanced yet? Three brothers.
Sinus trouble, Rush? Did you catch that? Sinus trouble, Rush? Are you on that Bolivian marching powder diet again?
Three brothers, but not related to the three women, have been arrested in Cleveland, which voted Obama. Not that that's got anything to do with anything.
This is just an aside. Do you hear a sort of exhaustion in his voice? Do you hear? That's not the old Flimball. That's not the Flush we know and despise. I think he knows he's on the way out. But this is 3 minutes and 11 seconds of a 3 minute and 47 second clip that's all set up. You know, for years I've had people writing saying they think he's back on the junk. I think he might be.
One of who has the baby? What? Double welfare benefits if one of the women has a baby. No, I don't know.
I got to back up.
Fascinating. Here are these. Three brothers, but not related to the three women, have been arrested in Cleveland, which voted Obama. Not that that's got anything to do with anything. One of who has...
Cleveland, which voted for Obama. Not that that's got anything to do with it, but I'm going to mention it because I think it has something to do with it. Man. Drugs hurt.
Double welfare benefits if one of the women has a baby. No, I don't know. I just wanted... Fascinating to hear the same thing happened last night on Hawaii 5-0, and I guarantee you, people watch it on why it happened on TV. It is for real.
Yeah, okay. Thanks to the folks at Media Matters for some poor, bedraggled, underappreciated intern catching that. Excuse me? Now, if you can get through all that jargon and all that babble, what he's apparently concerned about is that they're going to get welfare benefits. This was a scam to get welfare benefits. Three women have been held in human bondage, raped, tortured, beaten, and this paragon of GOP conservatism is worried about whether or not they'll get welfare, or whether they got welfare. Whatever he means by the word welfare, because, you know, when right-wing millionaires talk, you know, multimillionaires, possibly billionaires, you know, he's been 10 years at the $35 to $50 million level, so he's probably a billionaire at this point, if those numbers are true. when right-wing billionaires start talking about welfare, you see the air quotes, they've got this imaginary fantasy land in their head where poor people are driving around in Cadillacs and eating, beef Wellington for breakfast. And they don't realize what a brutal misery the welfare system is in this country. Flush, for instance, probably doesn't know about the Georgia administrator of the entire welfare system in Georgia who put Zero brand candy bars on each worker's desk as a reminder to them that they were to approve zero benefits. Understand that this is how the right-wing mind works. They see welfare as something that poor people have that they goddamn want, and they're not going to be happy until they have it. And yes, Texas Betsy pointing out something here that is absolutely true. She says, no way could the kidnapper collect welfare benefits on these women without their Social Security number, and you can be sure that the FBI has an alert on those. Exactly. It's almost impossible that there would have been. Any welfare benefits. It wasn't about the welfare, but that's the way these sick sociopaths' minds work. Because all they can think about is money, 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 money. Good God. I don't know. I'm gonna floss my brain or something for a couple of minutes here because a bumper comes to mind. And I just feel all dirty from having listened to the pustulant one. Apparently I did the same thing to Jeremy. He wrote in and said, this is more of a tiff-tiff. It is so sad bullshit talk of this POS. Damn, hearing this is way worse than just the hits. Thanks for sharing. Yeah, if you wanted some inspiration to go out there and get busy with Stop Rush, there you go. This is the horn.
Money.
Money makes the world go round, the world go round, the world go round. Money makes the world go round, it makes the world go round. A mark, a yen, a buck, or a pound. A mark, a yen, a buck, or a pound. Is all that makes the world go round. That clinking, clanking sound that makes the world go round. Money, 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 money. If you happen to be rich and to feel like a nice entertainer, you can pay for a gay escapade. If you happen to be rich and alone and you need a companion, you can ring ding-a-ling for some mate. If you happen to be rich and you find you are left by your lover and you moan and you groan quite a lot, you can take it on the chin, call a cab and begin to recover on your 14-carat yacht.
What?
Money makes the world go round, the world go round, the world go round. Money makes us go round, of that we both are sure. On being poor.
Money, money, money. Money, money, money. Money, money, money. Money, money, money.
Money, money, money. money, 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 money.
When you haven't any coal in your stove and you freeze in the winter and you curse to the wind at your fate. When you haven't any shoes on your feet, your coat's thin as paper and you look 30 pounds underweight. When you go to get a word of advice in the fat little pastor, he will tell you to love them or more. But when hunger comes to rap, rat-a-tat, rat-a-tat, at the window.
At the window.
Who's there?
Hunger.
Oh, hunger.
See how love flies out the door. Money makes the world go round the world, go round the world. Money makes the world go round the clinking, clanking sound of
money, 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 money. Get a little, money, 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 money. Mark a yen, a buck or a pound. That clinking, clanking, clucking sound is all that makes the world go round.
It makes the world go round.
You know, when it comes to money songs, I somehow like that better than the Beatles' Money, That's What I Want, or Pink Floyd's Money, because money from Cabaret, Joel Grey and Liza Minnelli bring this almost orgasmic quality to it. Money, 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 money. And that's what it is to the right wing. It's more important than people. It's more important than anything. Flush Flembaugh's having a hissy right now. He's not screaming at some liberal. I mean, the guy who runs Cumulus Communications is no liberal, no progressive. God knows if he was. Well, you know, the people that we really value in this world, people like Mike Malloy or Rick Smith, would be on 300 stations. The head of Cumulus Communications is a right-winger. But money makes his world go around, too. And Flush Flembaugh is killing his money. And so Flush is in a screaming hissy fit at another right-winger because the other right-winger is kind of interested in that stuff that Rush has been worshiping all this time. Again, if you ever wanted a good reason to go and help out a little bit at Stop Rush, do it. Do it. Because that Stop Rush website is really, really user-friendly. They'll give you a list of who's currently advertising. They'll give you their Twitter handles, and you can sit there and tweet to them, yeah, sorry. Yeah, and that's the thing. I saw that today about Dairy Queen, and I'm like, damn. Because somehow or another, Dairy Queen bought out the franchise to Orange Julius, which I thought had just completely disappeared. And I used to love Orange Julius. Invented by a man named Julius Fried in the 1920s, and it promulgated through malls all over America. It was cool, and it was refreshing, and it was juice-based, and it was yummy. And they're back, and I went, oh, cool! I wonder if they're still as good. Or has Dairy Queen Corporation screwed them up? And no, they're pretty much the real thing. But I can't go back now if Dairy Queen is advertising with Flush Flembaugh. I'll be telling them so. Watch my Twitter feed. I'll try to get it done as soon as the show's over. Oh, by the way, huge thanks to Gary, who just a little bit ago took care of tonight's fundraising. Thank you, Gary. Any message? Anything you'd like to get the word out? Anything you want people to know? Thank you. And thanks also to Rob, who has also helped out. If you guys want to kick in and help out with what Gary just did, that would be really, really cool. Maybe we could pick up a little of the slack that we lost at the end of April when we wound up in a $300 hole. Much appreciated. Much appreciated indeed. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
This is Edward. How are you?
I'm well, Edward. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. After you played the money song from Cabaret, I love that, and it makes the world go round.
The whole, you know, I'm not that much of a Broadway musical kind of fan, but there are a few great ones, and Cabaret's one of them.
You're telling me. Well, while I was going to call you about what is not funny. You may have heard of this already. This three-year-old in Florida was playing with his uncle's pistol, and it went off and killed the three-year-old.
Oh, Jesus.
How about that?
There's one of these every day now.
I know. What in the hell is it going to take to make this goddamn country wake up?
I wish I had an answer, Edward. I do have an answer. I have an answer. This country, I think, is largely waking up.
Well, I hope so.
On this issue. But as long as the NRA continues to exist in its present form, all efforts to do right by the things that the American people want will be stymied.
Yep.
I mean, you've got that prattling twit, Kelly Ayotte, up in New Hampshire, who was one of the ones who almost single-handedly killed that poor little pathetic, weak-kneed attempt at a background check bill. She almost personally, single-handedly did it in, claiming now that she didn't because her poll numbers have fallen like a paralyzed buzzard.
Yep, but I mean, these people don't realize, I think, that they are being videotaped for posterity.
Well, it's interesting. My Senator Joe Manchin is going to be having a public meeting here in Fayette County sometime in the fairly near future. And I wonder if I'll see a bunch of video cameras there, or what's more, I wonder if I'll show up and see a sign that says, no video cameras.
Well, you never know.
Of course, what's interesting about Joe Manchin, though, is that if he has this public meeting, he's going to have a bunch of NRA creeps on his back, thinking that he's trying to take away their freedom-protecting gun rights.
Oh, boy.
NRA has been running ads here like wild. And this is the fun part. This is what they say. Tell Joe Manchin that you don't like it when he sides with Barack Obama taking away people's guns.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, and another little thing. West Texas, that blew up, they're getting $1 million, I think it is, to take care of everything that was destroyed.
Yeah, that was the $1 million pitiful little insurance policy that they carried.
Ain't that something? Oh,
well, it's Texas, right, Edward?
You're telling me. deep in the heart of.
Must be. It's got to make being there a little frustrating from time to time. I mean, I never openly ask that question of my Texas friends like you or Sergi or Texas Betsy or Rick or Waggy or anybody else, but it's got to get a little frustrating.
Yeah, it gets frustrating. What I do is I go in the bathroom, close the door, and scream for 5 minutes.
Because
you can't do much about it, except go to the polls.
Go to the polls and,
this week.
Go to the polls and vote in your gerrymandered district.
That's right. Lordy Jesus.
I know.
Well, anyway, I wanted to give you that horrible news from Florida about that poor little child.
Oh, mercy sakes. And then the one from last night, you know, with the non-life-threatening injuries where the 5-year-old shot his 7-year-old brother in the back. You
know. I didn't know that. I heard that on your show this evening. Oh, well, whatever. We do the best we can, and that's all we can do.
Yeah, just hang out.
I don't believe in the flying spaghetti monster. I don't pray. So
well, yeah, I'm not. Yeah, I'm not a praying guy either.
Me either. I always liked what Madeline Murray O'Hara said about praying. She said, "You know, that's schizophrenic. You're talking to yourself."
Well, under most circumstances, it would be, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And under any other circumstances, if you walked around saying that some invisible person or thing or voice was talking to you, you know, we've got medicines that'll make the voices go away.
That's right. And there's a whole lot of people in this country, I would like to give them one.
Yeah.
Right in the you-know-what.
Absolutely, Edward.
You take care.
You have a good evening.
You do, too.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Edward calling from Dallas. Irish Dave pointing out the money song from Cabaret. That's Bishop Chicken Mitt's favorite. favorite Broadway show tune. On the other hand, Arian Ann, She-Wolf of the LDS, is in the market for a new favorite since Tomorrow Belongs to Me didn't work out so good. Chicken nit. Oh, God. A reminder coming in from Isaac. Mitt Romney is the co-owner and co-founder of Bain Capital. Bain, a private equity fund, was also part of Cumulus Media Partners until Cumulus Media, Inc. went public and bought out Romney's interest. Well, howdy-do. Because Bain also has an ownership interest in Clear Channel, right? Or was that also bought out? Is that all part of the whole Cumulus deal? Yeah, these things... these things have connections that if we bother to pay attention to them, make things a little bit clearer than they might otherwise be. So it's about 4 minutes before the hour. Lines lighting up, but some open yet. 304-658-3333. And on the Skype line, Bob Kincaid Horn. Hey, who've I got?
You got Jeff, and they call me the energy evangelist. So I figured it's a good night to call in. We're leaving D.C. and headed back to New York.
Oh, yeah? How has D.C. been?
Well, it was eventful. It was an eventful thing. You got a few thinkers there who actually wanted to fix stuff. I mean, not that many.
Unfortunately, they are rather soundly outnumbered.
I agree, but the reason why I'm calling is I emailed you, and I went on yesterday. I talked about, and since it's a religious night, and you got the energy evangelist here. Did you get that email I sent you about the 80-year-old nun who?
Yeah, I did.
Involved with the. Well, I thought you might want to mention that, but I don't have the details in front of me.
No, I've got the story right here. The Prophets of Oak Ridge, is that the one you're talking about?
I think that's what it was. That's Tennessee, yeah. And they're going to arraign that poor woman because she doesn't like nuclear power, but she likes renewable energy. And she was involved with the Manhattan Project way back when, and she was, I think, a nuclear physicist. She became a nun, unfortunately, but that's besides the point. And I just thought you'd get a kick out of that for your religious night.
She is 82 years old. She's a nun, and she and two other individuals in what must have just made the national security superstructure have a little bit of a hissy got inside one of the most tightly guarded nuclear weapons facilities in the United States. And they're going to trial, sabotage charges?
Yep. They got in, they walked past the guards in this highly... I don't have all the details in front of me because we're traveling, but they walked past the guards and got in somehow, and I guess they didn't do any damage. And then they were walking around, but they were spray painting the building, so they considered that sabotage. Of course, the woman feels as though if they can get in there, anybody can get in there.
Yeah, and but by the same token, they didn't go in there to do any harm. They went in there
exactly.
To protest. What the article refers to Oak Ridge as the Fort Knox of uranium. Jeez. Yeah.
I'm sorry. This is absolutely hilarious, but if you're the person who is going to put behind bars at 80-some-odd years old, I don't think it's funny.
No, and the fact of the matter is, it's reminiscent of the shabby way that we treat people who protest down at School of the Americas. In Georgia, School of the Americas Watch has for years now done an annual protest down there. That's where, of course, School of the Americas is where we took the up and coming military class from various right wing thug dictatorships in Central and South America and taught them how to torture their own people. You know, with your money. Supported by your tax dollars, our tax dollars.
I'm agreeing with you. My wife we listened to Dr. O'Brien or Bill O'Brien this morning, on the way down, and this guy's great. And then I listened to you, and you had, and my wife said to me, she said, this guy has a great way with the way he tells a story. And I, and you know, the it's just a great way. But I'll call you next week because I want to talk to you about the problem we have is, I feel as though it's all of it across the board, and unless the insanity takes over, but it's strictly all economics. And you can fix the political system with this. You can fix pretty much all this crap. You can stop mountaintop removal system if you just focus on the economics of it. But we love the way you tell a story, and I love O'Brien stuff.
Well, you should drop Dr. Bill a line and tell him so. He would be extremely gratified to hear it. And he was talking earlier today about how committed he is to answering every note he gets. It's W.A. O'Brien. Pardon?
Yeah, go ahead. I did that. I did exactly as it said it on the thing with the dot, the whole deal. And but just repeat it one more time.
Yeah, W.A. O'Brien, 906. No dots, no just W.A. O'Brien, 906 at gmail.com.
I did that. I got a kickback, but I'll
and I really appreciate you. I really appreciate you offering up accolades for Dr. Bill, because for anyone who is not listening to him or not downloading his podcast yet, you have no idea what they're missing.
It is a must. It is an absolute must, because he looks at the thing the way no one else has. I listened when I first tuned into you. I heard O'Brien speak, and this is about maybe 6 months ago, 4 months ago, and. I just love his stuff. It's just phenomenal. And by the way, I just want to let you know. I haven't contributed yet, so I'm just. But I do know that my public station, my NPR station, gets $4 million. My local public station raises $4 million a year, $1 million a quarter, and. You guys and O'Brien and you guys are worth, you know, we got to talk about economics here, but you guys are worth as much as they are. And I just, I really think, that, you know, I support a lot of.
Well, you know, this is, frankly, some of this is just my failing. All of my experience has largely just been the behind the microphone part of all of this, and by dint of necessity, learning some of the technical stuff. But by the same token, I don't ever want to be in the position that a Rush Limbaugh is in. I'm not even talking about it, politically or philosophically. That $50 million he's getting every year comes at a terrible price. It just about destroyed him when he was all junked up on the on the street, though.
You've got no argument for me. My point is that no human being and no radio station or nothing is worth. They're worth a little more in some cases for the amount of education that they put into them. But no one, no, the system is so screwed up with it. No human being and no corporation is worth a million or a billion times more than any other thing. There's a certain measurement where it could go up and down, but not nowhere near the kind of stuff that's going on in this economic system. And if we can fix that, my wife's just coming. What did you just say, my dear? There's such a huge disparity in this economic system that it's outrageous. You should not have to be begging for money. The money should just flow because you guys are performing a service. That's my personal feeling. Maybe I'm totally out.
Oh, I really appreciate it, Jeff. I truly, truly do. And many thanks to your wife for her kind words as well. You know, if we can just keep things going, so we're trying to do is pay the bills, man.
That's exactly we. My mother, she passed away a few years back, but she used to get so mad at me because I take every dime I had, and we'd go try to put it into humanitarian issues. She said, "How can you do this? You know, you know, you're not gaining nothing. No one's paying you for what you're doing." And we said, "You don't understand. My payment is satisfaction. If we can move something just a little teeny bit forward, my satisfaction is worth it as long as I can afford to keep living. That's the key here is." And what you're saying, the same thing. We got to keep the lights paid because that's the way the system works. And you just need a little bit. But we're NPR with the major stations coming.
Well, and one of the, you know, what you mentioned NPR, and one of the frustrating things about them, I was reading a story, I forget where it was, maybe Salon or something last week, about the fact that they have been utterly corporatized. No, I think it was at Alternet. They've been utterly corporatized into hustling just odious right-wing crap, and on a couple of award-winning shows, no less, one of them being This American Life.
Uh-huh.
Just shameless shilling.
Well, I want to tell you a true story, and I'm going back now. When Mobile Support was Mobile Masterpiece Theater and Texaco Performing Arts, they let me do a show with a fellow named Tom Lally. I'm going back. It was an environment show, went nationwide, 40 years ago, and I did my first show then. And we did every third week, we did a show on renewable energy and the economics of it. I got a phone call from, at the time, the station, the guy who runs the stations. He and I were very close friends for a while. Well, not very close, but we were friendly for a while. And all of a sudden, I can't like to talk about energy issues anymore. So he says, why not? He said, because it doesn't affect me directly, but Texaco Performing Arts and Mobile Masterpiece Theater time threatened to pull funding to the arts, and that's a tremendous amount of money. It doesn't affect me directly. But when the guy told me that one thing, he said, my lousy one voice is making such a difference in the system. So I got to tell you, once I heard that, I can tell you, just keep up the good work. I'm a humanitarian. I don't think that the Dems. I was an independent, and I'm truly independent. But I think that we need a humanitarian party on both sides. And we had this conversation about a month ago. But I just realized we have to get this thing to work, and we can't. And I don't want to badmouth. I mean, never mind. I won't go into it. It's a philosophy.
I understand.
You see where I'm going?
Yeah, I do.
But anyway, I'm sorry I wanted to call him, but driving this way, we just left BBC about.
Well, yeah, and do be safe going home. It's not a terrible drive between Boston or between DC and New York, but it's a busy one.
No, we stop, and I'm too old to keep on going. I stop every 4 hours and go to a hotel and get a bite to eat, you know.
Yeah, even at 50, my ability to do the whole road warrior thing. I think the most I ever drove in a day was like, 1,000 miles or something. And
that's a lot of work.
Yeah. I mean, you're not the same person when you get out of the car that you were when you got in it.
Well, I wanted to touch on something. Years ago, if you were a truck driver, you went ahead and you drove, I think, 600 miles in a day, maybe four. I'm not sure exactly, so don't quote me on it. But, and you took your time, you stopped for a cup of coffee, and you got to your job. But now these poor guys got machines up their butt, and they got GPSs up their noses, and they got to hustle their asses off. I watch a FedEx guy that day. It's pure slavery, man. It's pure slavery. There is no reason in this world why a human being has to work this hard just to make a living. It's just outrageous. Anyway, that's my personal opinion. Maybe people disagree with that. I think that things are just, we should have a time where you can just work 20, 30 hours a week and see your family and your folks and talk to your kids. Maybe sit down at a table and have dinner with them. I think that would be a good thing to do now. And believe me, that's not a religious function. This is something I'm talking about as a humanitarian.
And I think that makes the message all the more valid.
Well, guys, keep up the good work, and I wish I could put forth more stuff, but I'll give you a holler on you sometime next week. Thanks, guys. Thanks very much.
All right, thanks a lot, and safe travels, Jeff.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye now. Calling from the road, Jeff. And lines are open, 304-658-3333 for your comments. A couple of emails rolling in since I brought up the issue, or brought up the subject of Dr. Bill. Jack writes from Shreveport, and he says, subject line, Dr. Bill, just saying it's the best. And Jack says, the content of what we can gather from the knowledge that Dr. Bill has to give us is so incredibly useful and empowering to what we need to keep a democracy going is so valuable that I have no words to express it. I've never before had the privilege to be availed of such knowledge. Let Dr. Bill know that even if we are not listening when he's live on the air, we are still listening. And the interaction will come. I realize this is probably a tough time slot for Dr. Bill to be working in, but you know, if somebody's a rerun someday, Monday through Wednesday, if it's a Monday, a Tuesday, or a Wednesday, somebody's a rerun that you ordinarily listen to between 4 and 6, pop over to the Horn and listen to Dr. Bill live. He welcomes phone calls. He welcomes emails. And, you know, the one thing that is very much a reality is you're liable to get caught up in what's going on, and you don't pick up the phone because you don't want to interrupt. But it is okay to interrupt. I promise you it is. Shortly before showtime, and I'll be going back to the phones in a minute. Shortly before showtime, I got a note from Ron and Raleigh. And Ron points these things out, and frankly, I have no real way of responding to them, except that I find what Ron is talking about, you know, disturbing. The subject line, Tom Hartman, ARG. Hey, Bob. For the second time in 3 weeks, and this is not me going after Tom. Good God. Yeah, that's like, well, you know that joke, the punchline to which is, that's right, take it all? Yeah. Yeah. For the second time in 3 weeks, Tom Hartman is sharing an hour of his program with some right-wing horse's ass. With the disparity between progressive talk and conservative talk, and what Ron means by that is the statistic that for every hour of progressive radio, there's something like 1,000, and these are national, for every national hour of progressive radio, there's 1,000 hours of right-wing filthy, vomitous hate. With the disparity between progressive talk and conservative talk, this guy shares his time with the right wing. He claims to have developed a close friendship with one of them, Rusty Humphreys. In my opinion, Tom Hartman is no better than a fifth columnist. He started as a Repiglican, and in his heart of hearts, he's still a Repiglican. Do you think you could share your program, Bob, with a right winger for any amount of time? Well, to answer that question, no. I mean, we have an open ban on right-wingers. The First Amendment, it does not operate on the Horn. We have no time for people hollering, Benghazi! We have utterly no time for anybody, they're going to take our freedoms away because they want our guns. Got no time for that. So no. And you know why? Because the operating premise of the Horn is that we will carry on a discussion, a dialogue, even sometimes a debate among ourselves in good faith. There is not a single good faith argument being offered by the right wing in this country, because they're all predicated on some sort of bigotry, some kind of bias, some sort of prejudice, some sort of racism, sexism, ableism. Jesus, criminy, this report that came out from the Heritage Foundation a couple of days ago that says, having an immigration bill cost us $1 trillion because all them Mexicans don't do nothing but get on our welfare. Again with the welfare. Really. And one of the authors, by the way, one of the authors of that report, in case you were wondering, is a cat by the name of Jason Richwine. Okay. He came to the Heritage Foundation in 2010. Got himself a posthole digger in public policy. A guy over at the Washington Post dug up his dissertation. Yeah. Here's what the Washington Post operative Dylan Matthews writes about Jason Richwine's dissertation. And if you ever see a photograph of this guy, you gotta love his little alfalfa parted down the middle haircut. It's precious. That was our catty moment of ad hominem invective. Anyway, Dylan Matthews writes, Richwine's dissertation asserts. sit down. Richwine's dissertation, no, get the tennis ball and the duct tape. Richwan's dissertation asserts that there are deep-set differentials in intelligence between races. Oh, F me running, not this again. While it's clear he thinks it's partly due to genetics, you know, I'm listening really, really carefully, and somewhere I hear Dr. John kicking furniture. While it's clear he thinks it's partly due to genetics, quote, the totality of the evidence suggests a genetic component to group differences in IQ, unquote. That's what Jason Richwine with his alfalfa, greasy alfalfa haircut says. He argues the most important thing is that the differences in group IQs are persistent. Is this 2013 or 1813? Somebody help me. For whatever reason. These are Jason Richwine's words. If you are Hispanic, feel free to kick furniture, or better, don't. You know, stuff's expensive, and you might hurt your foot. But this is what he says. No one knows whether Hispanics will ever reach, no one knows whether Hispanics will ever reach IQ parity with whites. But the prediction that new Hispanic immigrants will have low IQ children and grandchildren is difficult to argue against. Well, I suppose so, if you've got your little clan hat on there, Imperial Wizard Richwine. Klegel. I am deeply challenged not to just pound on the desk and start hollering. Agnes doesn't like it when I holler. Even though the studio is in the far end of the house, it's a short house. Scares the dog. In 2009, a human being was awarded a public policy doctorate for an argument that Hispanics are not as smart as so-called whites, and he doesn't know if they ever can be. Now, I have never sat through a PhD dissertation defense. I am given to understand they are difficult. But if you're defending a PhD, if you're doing a dissertation defense, don't you pretty much have to have some like-minded people to get past, hello, my name is Jason Richwine, and I think, I believe, yeah, there's the word, because there ain't no thinking involved here. My name is Jason Richwine, and I believe Hispanics will always be dumber than white folks. We got two problems here, at least. One lies in the fact that he's using God knows what kind of definition for white folks. As we may recall, the definition of white folks has been fluid throughout the centuries ever since the concept was invented. And yes, the concept of race was invented by white folks who defined white folks pretty damn narrowly. There was a time in this country when Italians were not white folks. There was a time in this country when Irish were not white folks. There was a time in this country when Jews were not white folks. There still is a time in this country when Muslims are not white folks, even if they are. You notice how quickly we began, nationally, not me, not you, but nationally we began to define Tamerlane and Dzhokhar Tsarnaev as Muslims or Chechens? Shh. Anybody looking? Anybody listening? White folks. So here, in 2009, in a doctoral dissertation, Jason Richwine declares Hispanic people ain't white folks. If you're a baseball fan, you may know this story. Back in the early days of professional baseball, there wasn't necessarily a race ban. There was not a color line in baseball for a little while. And the Cincinnati Reds, the oldest Major League Baseball franchise, found a guy in Cuba that was unhittable. He was a pitcher. And I can't remember the guy's name, but he was basically the cause for the color line. Because he was Cuban. Not because he was any darker than anybody else on the Cincinnati Reds. He was Cuban. He therefore could not possibly be deemed white. And at the time, the Reds wanted him badly enough that the ownership went so far as to, and this was the phrase they used, chart out his pedigree to show that he was whiter than a bar of Castile soap. But he couldn't be white because he was Cuban. Not a matter of passing or not passing. It's not a matter of a brown, you know, the brown bag test or anything. He was Cuban. Now, in 2013, looking back at reruns of I Love Lucy, there's nobody out there that's going that I think would very credibly argue that, you know, Desi Arnaz, the Ricky Ricardo character, was not white. But Cuban offsets white, as did Italian, as did Irish, as did Jewish, as did Russian. You know, remember, white Russians and black Russians? Red Celts and black Celts? So that's problem one. Hispanics, doesn't matter how pale you are, have been declared non-white by this goober who helped write the Heritage Foundation's recent immigration report. Problem two lies in the fact that this idea of IQ parity, well, check me, but aren't there still significant questions about the validity of IQ testing? No one knows whether Hispanics will ever reach IQ parity with whites. But the prediction that new Hispanic immigrants will have low IQ children and grandchildren is difficult to argue against. F it all. Those people aren't as smart as us? You know, among other things, there's statistical evidence to show that Hispanic immigrants to the United States learn English on a parity curve with any other immigrant group. Not that learning English is a mark of intelligence. Note the number of native speakers of said language in this country who have not the first freaking clue how it works. I could care less. Eugenics for the 21st century. It's so funny when this story broke about Jason Richwine's dissertation. The vice president of communications... oh, goddess of irony. Stop it. The vice president of communications for the Heritage Foundation is a guy named Mike Gonzalez. Really? And he sent a lickety-split note over to the folks at Think Progress and said, This is not a work product of the Heritage Foundation, talking about the dissertation. This is not a work product of the Heritage Foundation. Its findings in no way reflect the positions of the Heritage Foundation, nor do the findings affect the conclusion of our study on the cost of amnesty to the U.S. taxpayer. No. The things that affect the conclusions of their study on the cost of amnesty to the U.S. taxpayer is the fact that it is utter and unmitigated bullshit. That affects the conclusions. But really, as quick as he got done typing that, you can almost imagine Mike Gonzalez walking into Jason Richwine's office and saying, "You saying I'm stupid? I'm Vice President of effing Communications for the Heritage Foundation, Jason. You saying I'm stupid?" What's your name again? My name is Mike Gonzalez. Oh, you're one of the white, not stupid Hispanics. No, I was not talking about you. I bet your people came straight from Spain, didn't they? Yeah, see, you're not intermarried or intermingled with any of those native people. Those are the dumb ones. So to go back to Ron and Raleigh's note, he said, "Do you think you could share your program with a right winger for any amount of time?" Do we have the answer to that now? I think so. Then the question is, why does Tom Hartman? The last guy today was some loudmouth named Steve Marlsberg from Newsmax. Really? Newsmuck? Ron says, "Tom does not do the progressive agenda good by giving the right wing an additional platform." But maybe it's not about doing the progressives any good. Thomas writing in saying, yeah, Jason Richwine had some help. He earned his Ph.D. in public policy in 2009 from Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. His dissertation committee consisted of George J. Borjas, chair, Richard J. Zeckhauser, and Christopher Jenks. Borjas is your basic run-of-the-mill anti-immigrant conservative with substantial scholarly and popular works explaining just how bad brown people are for America. Zeckhauser is more of a money guy, but his Wikipedia page describes him as one of the whiz kids assembled by Defense Secretary Robert S. McNamara to apply cutting-edge analysis to Cold War military strategy. The oddball in this list is Christopher Jenks. Jenks is currently on the editorial board of the American Prospect, and many decades ago, he was the editor of the New Republic. In the acknowledgments of Richwine's dissertation, he states that, "I want to thank my Harvard committee members, starting with George Borjas, who, or maybe it's Borges, who helped me navigate the minefield of early graduate school and has now seen me through to the finish. Richard Zeckhauser, never someone to shy away from controversial ideas, immediately embraced my work and offered new ideas as well as incisive critiques. Christopher Jenks generously signed on as the committee's late addition and offered his own valuable input." Reading between the lines, Thomas says, "It seems to me that someone refused to pass the dissertation as written, and Jenks was brought in late. Whatever else, these three people signed and passed Richwine's obviously bigoted and substandard dissertation, a dissertation that was so obviously wrong and bigoted that the Heritage Foundation, distanced themselves from Richwine immediately. These three professors should be held publicly accountable. More so, I believe that the signatures of these professors demonstrate unequivocally that simple bigotry resides at the heart of movement conservatism, and that this bigotry is no different whether talking about teabaggers or so-called scholars. The dean of the Kennedy School of Government is David T. Elwood." I've already dropped him a line, David_Elwood, E-L-L-W-O-O-D, at harvard.edu. Thomas says, "I've already dropped him a line asking why the school awarded Richwine a Ph.D. and what they plan to do in the future to prevent it from happening again. Perhaps you might as well." Thank you, Thomas. Irish Dave pointing out something. "What we have here is failure to communicate. Today's fun fact, the term Hispanic was made up by the first Dix census people. Apparently Latino was too uppity for them." I assume you're talking about Dick Nixon before he dicks you? Right. Jim pointing out, right-wing guest. Well, hell, Bob, you don't need one, as I hear enough Limbaugh Robertson playbacks on this program. It ain't the same as just giving them an hour to unequivocally spout their crap and not be challenged on it. This is evidentiary, whereas what goes on and what Ron's talking about is a matter of literally providing equal time to someone whose philosophy outguns yours, allegedly, your alleged philosophy, 1,000 to 1. So onward we go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Mark. Can you hear me?
I got you fine, Mark.
As Jarheads would say, Lima Charlie, 5x5, SGI Joe talk for all the right-wingers listening. I was listening to the testimony today on Fox. I guess you really couldn't get it anywhere else, and every time a Democratic congressman would go to ask a question, they would cut to a commercial.
Go to commercial, right.
Man, are these people that obvious? What a joke. But
they're as sincere, you know, they are as sincere as a prostitute's kiss. No slur on prostitutes.
It's a kiss. Yeah, I hear you.
See, there you go.
A dry kiss, maybe, but yeah, I just I know that most of the folks who listen to the show realize, and I've been commenting when I'm not blocked from Facebook with just reissuing some facts there. But you know, in April of 1983, the U.S. Embassy in Beirut, Lebanon, was attacked with a pretty good bomb. It probably tore down half of the embassy. It was a big embassy, and it killed 17 Americans. I thought it killed more Marines, but it did kill one Marine. The file building, similar to Oklahoma, but not to that scope, not too dissimilar, killed a Marine on duty. It was what Marines call post one, and it questioned the death at the front door. But it also killed, I think, a couple agency people, but 17 Americans that work there. And then you can jump forward to you can go to October 23rd. 1983, where the U.S. Marine Barracks, which is basically Beirut University's, I would imagine it was part of the university structure, that became occupied by the Marines under Ronald Reagan. But I would just remind folks, that think most of our listeners would know better or would be suspicious to begin with, but there were two Marines apparently awake that morning on duty. I was always under the impression that those Marines only had one Marine on duty, but I just read recently there was more than one. But none of the Marines that were guarding the others when they were sleeping, whatever day of the week it was or whatever hour, were allowed to carry ammunition. And so this one particular Marine sergeant that morning at 6 o'clock in the morning sees this large Mercedes truck, which I just also read recently had been stolen from the embassy a year prior, which was a pretty wise move for whoever did it. Let's hope it wasn't our own people that sold it to somebody so they could use it, because it would lower your instinct for just a moment, which could hesitate and hand your enemy the ball on the basketball court of life. But in any case, so the Marine realizes this vehicle is coming towards the compound and takes his empty M16 and has to use it as he runs to the compound screaming, either bomb or something, and then finds the footlocker. Marines are big on footlockers. They're reinforced footlockers. They do use some aircraft aluminum stuff, but it's still used to be all wood stuff. But he busts it open, gets a clip out of there, inserts the clip, turns around and sprays the front of the Mercedes truck, which was the largest bomb, non-nuclear, up until 1983, ever recorded by any legitimate government. So it was FBI investigates it. So it lifts this 5-story building up and drops it and probably wounds 600 Marines, but kills 300. And there were some special forces people there, but primarily United States Marines were killed in that. And that Marine that fired the weapon across the front of the truck, the radio, I think he cracked the windshield of the vehicle. They were able to establish was blown so high in the air that when he came back down, somehow he broke his femur, which is, I guess, considered one of the stronger bones of your body. So he had to have some altitude. So, you know, it was a very big bomb. And actually, the concussion and the scope of that bomb was so powerful, it probably saved his life because it just kind of blew him out of the picture. But the point I try to make in that observation compared to the poor situation in Benghazi, the Benghazi situation, and I see people writing it, I hear them talk on the radio, I hear it reiterated, was not an embassy. It was not even classified a consulate. It was an outpost where the ambassador, for whatever reason, was working there. And if you look at our own footage that's displayed to Americans, it's basically just a nice house, which is referred to as a home in a villa. You know, being an American, we would just call it a house in a subdivision or a neighborhood. And it's not a reinforced compound. So I don't wish this upon him. But ambassadors, having been a Marine security guard that guarded embassies, I was a smart enough kid at 19. Continuing to age 22, to realize these were very educated people with their degrees of proficiency and what they were hired for, whether it was economic or business or intelligence or language or all of it or political. And I gave them much margin of respect. And actually, from a military standpoint, ambassadors are your commanding officer at an embassy. I know I share a lot of information. I can't help the way I do communicate because of my...
You're doing fine.
But they have the equivalency when it comes to GS ratings as a brigadier general, or used to. So, but it's not a matter of how many stars. They are your commanding officer because they represent whatever American president's on duty at that time. So the poor ambassador, and I won't hold his homosexuality against him or for him, was a
right. It's utterly irrelevant.
He's a gay Democrat, and actually I'm very proud of him, and I guess he was considered a very gifted diplomat, had a high level of respect amongst the community.
Well, you know what? When I his name was Chris Stevens, right?
Correct.
When I read up on what kind of diplomat he was, we were very fortunate last Saturday to have a PRISM chat with a foreign policy expert by the name of Dr. Jeremy Suri. There, I have some philosophical differences with him, but there's no getting around the fact that he knows his stuff. And he opined rather at length and convincingly that we are doing a very piss-poor job of training our young diplomats to be senior diplomats at some point in their careers. And one of the things he pointed out was that they are not being taught diplomatic history. They are not steeped in American history. They're not steeped in world history. They don't have the skill set, you know, the deep background cultural skill set to go and do what they do. Instead, we've got this career path where they start out stamping visas in some consulate somewhere, and eventually they move upward. And I bring all of this up, Mark, to point out that everything that I can read about Ambassador Stevens suggested that he was not that type. He was, in fact, deeply immersed in understanding the culture in which he was working. And that's one of the things that makes his loss all the worse, all the sadder. But the fact of the matter is, this is a non-issue. When those Democratic members would question the question, the witnesses, and Fox was cutting away to a commercial. Well, there was something substantial going on there, Mark, and that was the fact that they were completely gutting the paranoid fantasies of the right wing about exactly what Benghazi is. You know, you've pointed out a number of facts that are most inconvenient to these people who are trying to make it, you know, whitewater for the second decade of the 21st century. You know, they've made these crazy-ass allegations. Well, why didn't we send in F-16s? Well, because they were all out of range, and all these witnesses agreed with that. Then there's the paranoia about Hillary Clinton, that she somehow denied additional security, sorry on that one. That there was a stand down among special forces teams. That one didn't hold up. These are all the things that Fox Radio Rwanda didn't allow anybody to hear, but were, in fact, the facts at the time, and remain so.
Yeah, I would agree with your interpretation 100%. They're not as well orchestrated or smooth, and actually, even the one female commentator, she's all hyped up, I guess, on caffeine or something, but she's like, she wants to shoot out of the TV, the blonde hair, is that Megan something?
Megan Kelly.
And she actually made the comment, yes, Bob, she made a comment, we're out of rhythm, we're out of sync, and when we come back, we'll be back in order. I think somebody spoke in her ear and said, yes, you're starting to let the Democrats speak or something. I don't mean to be so evilly narrow-minded.
Well, you're not being. That is how that operation works.
Correct. Sure it is. Yeah, it's sickening.
It's patently also dishonest.
I would also, totally dishonest, and of course, one of their big players was a speechwriter for Nixon, speaking of him, coincidentally, but any case. So, and that's who they are. And then, of course, they're high level, Bush people too. It's kind of like Bain Capital's connection to, the corporation, Stericide or something. But they didn't want Americans to know, in this last election cycle that's the company that does away with the dead babies from abortions. And actually Romney owned it, via a Bain Capital. And apparently he was aware of that. Awaringly so. Is that an English word? But in any case,
it is also, now.
Yeah, apparently it was, but and I've only had one sip of red wine. But and I also would bring up two more observations about this the thing, and how coincidental ISIS, a Middle Eastern person himself. But the distance, I just made sure I got my facts right, but the distance between Tripoli and Benghazi. This whole thing has bored me so much that I really didn't care to dig into the facts, but I happen to be off between assignments right now, and I did check my facts. It's 650 miles. So if you were to drive, there was no way a person could get from one city to another to help those Americans.
There's not exactly a Libyan Autobahn either, is there?
I'm guessing not, Bob, but just from the little bit I saw from the footage of poor Gaddafi's demise, I just don't pick up Libya as a country nor has the Maglev train that goes 300 miles an hour.
Yeah, ain't got one of them either.
I'm guessing I'm just going to go throw that out there. But I also see that if you were to fly on a helicopter, I had a few seconds to Google waiting online here, but if you were, it's basically like from Atlanta, Georgia, to Homestead, Florida, or Miami, and it's if you got in a jet, you couldn't get there. I think that's maybe a 2-hour flight from Atlanta to Miami with a running start, and a helicopter would be slower than that. And the main observation, the reason I bring up those time, distance, and would be that there were four United States Special Forces people, and I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Let's say there were six, because I've heard two numbers of them that were assigned. They were working, and I wouldn't say out of the embassy, but assigned through the embassy somehow to be trainers in Libya as the government changes. But those, and I know that's how they slide Special Forces people in and out of places, which goes back to Cambodia or prior to Vietnam or Vietnam itself. That's how we've used people. We're just here to teach you and train you and water purification and this and that. And then suddenly they pick up their rifle and they are the combatant. But nonetheless, these Special Forces trainers, I guess all got excited and wanted to go be G.I. Jane. So they cried like little bitches, and they got their officers, who are all bureaucrats, to scream. And then they gave the one jackass with the glasses, the senior person at this testimony today, who when pushed goes back, well, I'm not an economic person, I'm not security, I'm not law, but you know, he was relatively composed, but he really lost his chain of events, and he doesn't, unlike myself from early Alzheimer's, but he doesn't really have, he didn't really have any slam dunk moments. But these four special forces soldiers decide that they want to go in and save the day. But I would just share that the numbers that you hear from the attack in Benghazi, 12 hours away, that numbers range from 40 to 60 shooters in the compound, in the area, in the villa, that are overrunning this home. And it can be, and it's a bit, imagine that attack couldn't have lasted, let's give it, you know, if you gave it an hour or 2 hours, so it wouldn't have taken that long. But in any case, now I'm not criticizing the Americans, the corporation warriors that work for whatever private company. They're ex-Navy sailors. And if you join the Navy and you want to be a SEAL, you won't have a rifle in your hand. Probably, if you're a 19-year-old kid that says, I want to walk into an office and you have the capability to do it and you say you want to be a SEAL, you ain't going to have a rifle in your hand for probably 4 years. SEALs, you have to be enlisted in the Navy, then you have to be screened, then you have to get sent to the schools and recommend and go through boards. And before they hand you, and when they stick a rifle in your hand, you still have mucho training. So you're looking at most Navy SEALs are guys in their mid to late 20s and early 30s. And then they select each other. So unlike a Marine at age 18, you have a rifle in your hand before you even get out of boot camp. So it becomes, you're more comfortable with an M16 than a Fort. And, I mean, it's just a tool that's with you, like your boots. I mean, you got your boots and your rifle. And sometimes you'll see Marines on operations. They'll be going to a shower, and that's all they've got. It's their boots, their boxer trunks, and a goddamn rifle. Now, my argument, and it's not an immature Navy Marine Corps observation. My argument is these were corporation employees. And it's an argument against privatization of any and all services, actually, which are important, whether it's a library or water.
Right, because when you privatize, you subject it to the profit motive, and when the profit motive is brought in, the sole operating philosophy of any corporation is to make a profit, and everything else comes secondary to that. I remember, Mark, when George was starting Bush War II, and we privatized the delivery of mail to troops in the field in Iraq. And I remember thinking, well, this is going to work out well.
Sure.
Because wasn't that something that was handled by the Quartermaster Corps?
Well, it was APO or FPO, and Quartermaster Corps once it got to the soldiers, yes.
Yeah, and so they're a branch of the military, and they, by definition, have to follow military orders, and if they say, get the mail through, they say, yes, sir, and they go, or yes, ma'am, and go get the mail through.
That's correct.
Well, on the other hand, these private contractors, I'm not going there. They're shooting people.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No.
I didn't know they jammed up their mail, Bob. I did not know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You realize that what that does to your feelings and emotions?
Oh, it's not damaging. It is destructive of unit morale, is it not?
There are Marines, Bob. When you're a squad leader, if you're in a squad, and a Marine gets a piece of mail, when they pass out the mail, you look for your own mail, and when you get your mail, you look and see who it's from, and you go, okay, I can guess what this is going to be about. And then you kind of look around while you're opening up your letter to see what other people are getting, boxes or mail, and then you go, oh, check out Gomez over there, check out Johnson over there, he's crying, what's the deal? So, you know, your letter is your lifeline.
Yeah.
And it's your last act of connection to humanity.
And we privatized it in Iraq.
Well, you know, it's all...
And, of course, everybody remembers the story of the $29 Halliburger.
Yeah. Not hologram burger, but Halliburger. Or the plastic turkey, right?
There's so much of this stuff that I just can't forget because it is so directly contrary to all the patriotic stuff I was raised. You know, my dad talked about when he sailed off into the South Pacific, you know, little kid out of the hollers in West Virginia, It's so funny. I look at his photograph of him with his, you know, Dixie Cup sailor hat on and everything, and he looks like he's about 30. You know, he was 18. And you know, generationally, people in former generations always look older than they are. I don't know if it's our eyes or the weathering on the photo or whatever, but it's true. So he sails off into the South Pacific and spent about 6 months giving away his shrimp in the mess hall. Because they had it fairly regularly because, well, you know, they're bobbing along in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, right?
Makes sense, yeah.
And everybody always wanted to sit with him because they could have his because he wasn't going to eat that shit. Never seen such a thing in a place like West Virginia. He knew what an oyster was, but shrimp. And then one day he ate one, and nobody wanted to sit next to him on shrimp night anymore because he was going after somebody else's.
Aww.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, everybody griped about the chow. And you know, I mean, you know far better than I because I was never under the colors. But everybody gripes about this, and you know, it's one of the privileges of membership in the organization. You do get to bitch about it. But at the end of the day, there were magnificent logistical accomplishments made to keep troops fed. And the first damn thing that the Bush administration thought. Maybe it was even coexistent, was we're going to make a war on Iraq, and we got to help our buddies make a fortune off of it. And we must remember, Mark, that the way in which the Bush family first began climbing was when Herbert Walker or Digby Needle Dick or whatever, you know, whoever that progenitor was, got himself appointed to the World War I War Materiels Board. And that's when the money started rolling. That's that moment when the Bush family gets both its front feet and its back feet in the trough. And they haven't worked an honest day in their life since.
I totally agree, and you don't know that when you go in. You go in serving people like your father. You go in serving people like your family. You go in serving your community with the things that you perceive that are good things, and you don't know that they are under assault, or you want to think that they could be, so you're willing to do whatever it takes to do the job, and I would say whether you're a sailor or a Marine or a soldier or the Air Force or Coast Guard, that's the degree of commitment that all of those people, men and women, make is they're willing to do and give, even to include their lives, so it would furtherance the rest of our nation's society in a protective manner. You're willing to do the dangerous work because you make that commitment to each other, and you're like, holy shit, did you see so-and-so? He ran down that hall, he went and did, they grabbed this, they do that, and I don't besmirch today's American soldiers whatsoever. There is still a lot of courage amongst our society. We do have courageous people, as well as all societies have some courageous people. And our society is not as courageous on a wide scope as we would like to perceive it to be, but we do have courageous people. And the very observation that you make, Bob, is a commitment to each other. There are, you know, I had buddies from Coos Bay, Oregon to Birmingham, Alabama. I had buddies from Pensacola to I guess Pittsburgh. You know, it wasn't where you were from or who you were from. There was more people. You know, I had people that were in my squad that were from Louisiana and Tennessee. And I had people that were over me that may have been Dominican. It's like your observation you had earlier, but it was a commitment to our nation, just like I share with people about, that I run into. Would you think if the firemen worked for a corporation on 9/11, they would have ran up into that building to risk their lives? They did that for complete strangers out of devotion to their city, to their families, to their neighborhood, to their country, to their community. But when you put a corporation, you put yourself in a corporation,
apparently not going to make that commitment.
No, you have to first and foremost always act in the furtherance of the charter of the corporation, whose only goal is to make a profit. You know, that's why I find the entire subject field that they teach in MBA programs and so forth of business ethics to be an absolute laughable farce. The only ethics is the profit. And that's not me being some sort of ideologue, Mark. That's me acknowledging the reality of corporate structuring.
Well, apparently Jeffrey Skilling got 10 years whacked off his 24-year sentence, but he thought he could walk on time served. But there's some good values for us. I guess that's our new modern day hero. The best way to rob a bank is to own one, and that's somehow today's modern hero. And it's ironic. I would give the regional security officers, the people that tried to talk today, there were no bombshell results there. It was they got interrupted with the Arias conviction and also the display of the Ohio case. That both of those all of that hit at the 1700 hour, which really took a lot of wind out of their sails. They really didn't get the big fish today, which is President Hillary Clinton. If she wants it, it would be hers. But and so you get two presidents for the price of one. I'm actually a liberal, and I am for the environment, but I'm most importantly for families and futures, so not teachers on Wall Street. So I just called the show to share that with you, Bob.
Well, I'm glad you did, Mark. It was a wonderful conversation, and I sincerely appreciate it.
I don't know whoever your dad was, Bob, but he was a hell of a guy to end up with his son as smart as you.
He was a hell of a man, Mark. He was indeed.
I would say he was.
I think about him every day.
Obviously. See you, Bob.
Take care, Mark. Bye now. Yeah, he really was. And it's time to go. So thanks for wandering into the Cathedral of Common Sense for this prayer meeting Wednesday. I hope you enjoyed the communion as much as did I. Back tomorrow with Thorn in the Side Thursday. Thanks to everybody who makes all this happen. Let me say again, thanks to those who made tonight's fundraising a success. Thanks very much. Thanks to Gary, and thanks to Rob. Couldn't do it without you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT, ACHECT.org. We're making progress in Washington, and it's because, in large part, because of the work that you're doing. So if you haven't bugged, if you haven't communicated with your congressperson lately, it'd be a good time to write to him and let me know who you're talking to so that we can follow up and coordinate the efforts and work together, because working together is what makes us more likely to be successful. Thank you for doing that. And if you've never done it before, go to ACACT.org, learn all you can about the ACE Act and about the human rights disaster unfolding daily in Appalachia. Take action and be a part of something positive, something that we can do to create a future in one of the most neglected, put upon regions of this entire country. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next on the Horn.